Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David has a conversation with Lisa Rose Snow. Lisa Rose Snow is an award-winning filmmaker and performer who was raised by the ocean and now resides in Toronto. Since graduating from the Canadian Film Center's Writers Lab and participating in the Reykjavik Film Festival's Talent Lab, she has been busy working in television writing rooms on Frontier for Discovery Canada and Netflix, 10 Days in the Valley for ABC, and Little Dog for CBC. Snow is currently co-writing an episode of The Stone Diaries, which is in development with Halfire Entertainment, and working on development of two of her own series, Tongues and Over Easy. We'll hear about all of this and more in Greg's conversation with Lisa Rose Snow.
So I want to talk about Frontier, but let's start at the beginning when we first met, because we were both in the room at the Toronto Screenwriting Conference's Writing Room Intensive with Kim's Convenience.
Yes.
So Inns Choi was there, and Kevin White, and eight writers, you included in that eight, were all there to break story and work on that. So I kind of wanted to ask you a couple of questions about the session itself. What was your overall experience of that session? Do you feel like you learned a lot?
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. I'd never been in a writing room where it's episodic, so I'm not used to pitching like that. So it was a really great experience to go in there with a bunch of ideas and just have an opportunity to pitch them out and hear how people respond and build off them and see how they can sort of be integrated into a story structure like how Kim's does it.
So what do you walk away from that experience with? Like, what have you got in your toolbox now that maybe you didn't have before?
Well, I guess every time you pitch, it just gets a little bit more easier. You know, it's like it's a muscle, yeah. and the more you practice it, the more comfortable you get. And I mean, for me personally, anytime I feel like I use my voice and I try and be courageous with my ideas, that just makes me a better writer. It makes me a little less intimidated or nervous to pitch ideas that may fall flat. And I think it's quite similar to improv, where you're just mm-hmm. you're just throwing out and seeing how it works in the room. And you know, everyone in the room was really great. It was a super supportive room. I've been really lucky that I haven't been in a room yet, knock on wood, where I felt that I wasn't comfortable to use my voice or to give ideas. So when you're working with a new room, especially a room like this where mm-hmm. it was like a mock room where it was just the 8 hours, yeah. it felt really good that there was that comfort level and that sort of level of support right from the start.
Yeah, it's interesting because as a writer, you're kind of used to writing on your own, but then when it comes to the whole pitching thing, you're doing that in a room with everybody staring at you. Like, it's kind of like the worst. Like, if you want to be a writer, you do it maybe because you like being by yourself, but then the other end of it is that it's a very public thing as well when you're pitching ideas.
Yeah, especially with television. I mean, there's still, if you're writing, you know, features or shorts, there's still lots of sitting alone or sitting alone at a coffee shop,
yeah,
you know, but with TV, it's definitely more collaborative. So you have to be, you know, you have to practice your extrovert skills on those days.
It was interesting to be in the room and observe how, you know, there were people that were very vocal in the room while other people, you know, kind of sat back and had ideas when they were called upon, but didn't always, didn't necessarily sit forward and speak up. And that's just, you know, the different personalities that you get in the room, right?
Totally, 100%. And I mean, I come from an acting background and I've done a lot of improv, so I feel like, for me personally, I do feel comfortable, and I've always been a chatty Cathy, according to all my, you know, grade school report cards. So it wasn't too hard for me, but it definitely can be intimidating depending on the room. And so you just sort of have to, I just sort of have to force myself to just, you know, call upon that courage and just try. And, yeah, you know, sometimes you pitch and you fall flat on your face, but you know, you get back on that horse and you just keep going.
Right. Well, let's go back. Let's take a quick look at your IMDb page.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Okay.
Well, I want to talk about the where I'm going with this is kind of the evolution of you, from you as an actor to the writing side, because I know you from the writing side. I know that you've written several short films and you've directed and produced your own stuff. So I'm kind of interested, you know, looking at your IMDb page, you've been on in projects like Shattered City, The Halifax Explosion, This Hour is 22 Minutes, Seed, Haven, and Sex and Violence, all East Coast projects because you're originally from the East Coast, right?
That's right, yeah, born and raised in Halifax.
Yeah, a great city, by the way.
Yeah, great city.
So was there a time where, you know, you're doing the acting thing and you consciously made a decision, okay, I want to go to the other side of the camera. I want to be in control of the roles that I get, and I want to flex those creative muscles and write and direct and produce my own stuff?
Yeah, yeah, there was. I mean, I love acting and I still do it whenever I can, but, you know, there's a big long line of things you have to do before you get a part. You know, someone somewhere has to write a part that you're suitable for. A producer has to decide to produce that project where you are. You have to get an audition for that, and then you have to get the part next. So there's like all these steps before you can even have a chance to share your craft. And sometimes I'm a little impatient, and I'm like, well, I'd like to share my craft a little bit before that. And luckily, Nova Scotia has some really amazing programs that are really supportive. So I did the Atlantic Filmmakers Co-op's Film 5 program,
okay,
which is this really great program where they take 8 teams of a writer and director with each of a short film and spend a few months developing it. And then you pitch that project, and then 4 of those projects get funded to be made. So that's how I made my first short. And it was just like, I mean, I've always written. I've been a big journaler, and, you know, I would write plays in school. And then I worked with a theater company called Forerunner Playwrights Theater for a long time, and I had a few of my plays produced with them. And so it sort of was, I feel like, a natural evolution. And the control thing is a big thing, you know, like I've played all kinds of different parts, and some I'm more excited about than others. But I did find myself playing very specific roles, and I started to get a little frustrated with that. And so I decided to sort of start writing as sort of a creative outlet. I didn't even really think about it that much. It just sort of happened with Two Penny Roadkill. When I wrote that, it just sort of came out really naturally, and then we got accepted into Film 5, and then it got into the second production phase, and then all of a sudden it was like I was on set with 40 people directing something that I wrote, and it's all been kind of a surreal 4 years since that has happened, and now I'm sitting, you know, in a hotel room right now in Newfoundland working on Frontier, and it's sort of all quite surreal and pretty exciting.
Now, how much did had you gone to the CFC before you made Two Penny Roadkill?
No, not even a little bit.
Wow. No,
yeah, I went to CFC, I guess it was 2 years ago now. So yeah, so I did Film 5, and then I got accepted into the National Screen Institute's Drama Prize program and made my next short.
Okay.
And then, so I did Two Penny 1 year, One Fish Fly the next year, and then did CFC the following year.
Wow, so you came in there with a fair amount of experience when it comes to actually, you know, not only writing your own thing, but also producing and directing it. Like, you know, you kind of had that experience already.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, my experience was all in shorts, and then I got accepted into the Atlantic Film Festival Script Development Program, and my mentor at that, so that is where you, that program, you write a treatment for a feature, and then you sort of polish it, and possibly even write a draft. It was so long ago, I forget. I think you do write a draft, and then you pitch it at the film festival. And my mentor there was Noel Baker, who is one of the mentors at CFC. And so he sort of started talking to me about the Film Center and about the program, and sort of encouraged me to apply. So I sort of tweaked the piece that I had been working on in the script development program, and that's the piece that I get into the CFC with.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to writing, I feel as though, you know, you mentioned that you have a background in improv and you've also written plays. Do you think that that sets you or gives you a leg up in this industry, especially maybe the improv background, because you're able to maybe think quickly on your feet? Does that play into it at all, do you think, or no?
I mean, I think all life experience does play into writing and into the creative arts. I mean, I feel everyone should do improv, whether they're writers or not. I think improv makes you a better human.
Yeah, the ability
to say yes, and it translates to all situations in life. I feel like just for me, all those things just helped me feel more confident in myself as a person, which helps me feel more confident in myself as an artist, and then it just sort of helps me just to take more risks and just to worry less about failing and just to kind of keep trying.
I also feel like the playwriting aspect really gives you some unique experience that not necessarily everybody has. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting, actually, in my year at CFC, I think there was one girl who was in the program with me. She was a playwright as well. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, there's definitely, it's all story, right? So, like, it's just you change the medium. Even writing a feature versus writing TV, it's all different, but it's all really the same. And, yeah, and another girl at CFC that was in our program, And one of the gentlemen as well, they're novelists. So, you know, just like understanding story and then, you know, it's cool too, because like you have an idea and then it's like you think, what is this story? Is this a play? Is this a TV series? Is it a feature? Sometimes I have stories that I'm like, I want this to be a TV series. And it's like, no, that's not a series. Like you have maybe a 2-hour movie there. So, you know, it's fun to find what world your story fits best in.
Is your mind always working? Like, are you always thinking of ideas, or do they just kind of drop on you in unexpected ways?
Yeah, I mean, my mind is very busy. I try and like meditate and chill it out, but that doesn't work so well sometimes either. But I definitely try and be receptive to ideas. Like I always have at least 2 notebooks on me at all times, plus the notes in my phone. And I really try and respect an idea if it comes, you know, and jot it down. And as the old saying goes, you know, you get most of your best ideas when you're just about to fall asleep.
Yes.
And that, you know, that is annoying, but great.
Yeah.
Where you know, you're often like, I'm just like, oh, I don't want to turn the light back on. I don't know where my pen is. And I put my phone away, but it's like, okay, fine. But I listened to this podcast by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she has all these really cool ideas about ideas and about how they're sort of this like kind of magical thing, and then when they come to you, and if you don't respond to them, or if you don't give them their weight, or if you don't listen to them, they'll sort of just like leave you and go find someone else. And I love thinking of ideas like that, like these little like bits of inspirations that are floating around from person to person, just seeing who's willing to step up and you know, make them have life.
Okay, so before we get into Frontier, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast before, but when Anthony, Marco, and I do a bi-weekly podcast where we talk about the latest news in Canadian television, so whatever's, you know, been ordered to series or whatever's in production, if something's being canceled or the CRTC has done something stupid, we talk about that. And we usually record that at night, and we usually that means that we usually have an adult beverage. So it's actually, what is it, just after 7 o'clock your time in Newfoundland?
That's right, yep.
Okay, so I don't know if you're enjoying an adult beverage just any kind of beverage, but if you were going to relax, if you were going to relax and have something to drink, what would it be? And it doesn't have to have alcohol in it, but it's always fun if it does.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to, but it almost always does. I have, right now I'm enjoying a very nice Italian Chianti. I tend to go for Italian Chiantis for reds or If I'm going to go white, I'll go for a nice Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc.
Wow. Now, this sounds the way that you're talking, like you have a routine.
Don't tell my mom.
Yeah, if you're in a certain mood, it's one or the other.
Yeah, I go through phases with my wine, mm-hmm. And I've definitely have been on the white train for a long time, but I've switched up back over to my true love, red Italian wine. I'm not sure why. Like, it feels like homey, and I'm in a hotel, so it feels like, you know, it keeps me company better than a glass of white right now, I think.
You know, I think that totally makes sense to me, because when I first started drinking wine, I started drinking white, and you know, usually if you're going to drink white, they tell you to drink it chilled or cool anyway. But with a red, you just, because it's room temperature, you're naturally feeling cozy, and you kind of nestle down into that chair, and you know, you're not feeling that chill that you might from the white, because you're all, you know, it's all warm and ready to go.
That's right. And like, honestly, with this particular bottle of wine, it feels almost like a reward, because I somehow managed to completely break the hotel corkscrew, like immediately.
Oh.
It was one of those little ones that like kind of looks like a little guy, and its arms go up when you twist it. And then like I twisted it, and then like I went to push his arms down, and then it just like it snapped off. And I actually don't know where the snapped off bit is. Like, I feel like it's gotta be in the cork, but I couldn't find it. And it's not on the floor. It's not in the wine. So like, maybe I don't know where it went. But like, I'm really enjoying this wine because I worked really hard for it.
Well, let's talk about Frontier. Now, you joined Frontier for season 2, right? Or weren't in the room in season 1? Okay,
that's right. Yeah.
So how did that all come about?
Well, I have been working for the past few years assisting Sherry White, brilliant, brilliant Sherry White. And mm-hmm. Sherry came on to help sort of showrun the second season. And so I came in the room as her assistant and then, you know, kind of bugged everyone and made myself useful enough until they gave me the position of writer's assistant.
Yeah.
And so now we're in development for season 3. And so they've brought me on this time as the script coordinator. So it's really, really fun. It's such a great show and such a great room of people. And everyone in Newfoundland is just, they have the voice, they have the best dialect. Everyone sounds like they're like, you know, it's so musical how they speak. Mm-hmm. Everyone is so nice, you know. Sometimes people in Toronto, you know, sometimes people just are very busy and maybe just aren't as kind and open to strangers as the dear people of Newfoundland have been to me.
No, it's true. I went on a junket to St. John's a few years ago because of Sean Majumder's reality show.
Oh yes,
and that was and Peter Blackie was an executive producer and was also mm-hmm. on the show. And yeah, everybody was so nice and made us feel so welcome there. And I've missed the city and I want to go back to Newfoundland, but it's not necessarily an easy place to get to.
No, and it's so expensive. I get so annoyed. It's like, come on, Canada, you got to make it more accessible for us to be able to travel and explore you. Yeah, but it's amazing. Like, I mean, it's cold here. It's been so cold leaving cherry blossoms in Toronto. But yesterday I went iceberg hunting, which actually sounds much more dramatic than it was, because I drove literally 5 minutes from the studio and there's this like giant iceberg in the bay, and it was so amazing. And I didn't know this, but icebergs are like 10,000 years old, which is just like, it's just astonishing to me. My boyfriend told me that. I was like, that's not true. So I immediately Googled it and I was like, oh no, you're totally right. And it's just like hanging out 5 minutes away. Like it's so cool. So like this place has a lot of magic, and the Blackie brothers, they're so amazing, and I love working with them, and they've really, you know, brought this like really great team of people together and are making their own magic on the rock, and it feels really, really fun to be a part of it.
You know, it's ironic that, you know, you've got these 10,000 year old icebergs floating by while you're working or hanging out, and you guys are, you know, writing about, you know, the the beginnings of Canada,
yeah,
and the fur trade. So how much research have you had to do while you've been working on this show into these, I guess the world had already been built in season one, mm-hmm. but still, I imagine you probably did a little bit of research or maybe a lot in preparation for working on the show.
Yeah, definitely. You know, lots of time, lots of Googling and like lots of just like a lot of on the fly rehearsal mm-hmm. about like, researching when you're in the room and when things come up and then,
yeah.
you know, we're just trying to like, we're like, does this make sense? Like, would this have happened? Like, and then we have a lot of, Indigenous people on sort of on our research team because, you know, we're dealing with different cultures and we want to just make sure that we're really respectful and that we're being really authentic. So, you know, there's so much care, put into it, which I was like really stoked to see. You know, it's not like, it's not just people just writing away blindly. Like there's tons of research and lots of thought put into it. So that makes me feel really good and makes me just really excited to be part of a show that cares that much.
How many people are in the writer's room or how many were for season two?
Season two, that's a good question. There's one, two, three, four, five. I think there was about six or seven of us.
Okay.
Seven of us for season two. And for right now it's like we have, there's only about five of us in the room, but a couple of people are like switching out and
sure.
and Sherry's in LA, but she's still a part of it. So she, you know, is calling in all the time. So it's, The development room right now is a little bit more in like it's a little more flexible, mm-hmm. but still lots of people contributing ideas.
And I mean, talk about an all-star cast: Jason Momoa, Alan Hocko, Greg Brick, Jessica Matten, Brianne Hill, yeah. Zoe Boyle. I mean, it's an amazing cast. And it's a huge cast, so I guess that's part of the reason why there are more people in the writer's room for season two and season three, just because there's so many characters to write for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our character board is huge. It's totally full. But it's such a joy, you know, especially now working on the third season because, you know, you really know the actors. And I haven't actually been here for production, but most people in the room have. So mm-hmm. they know them and, like... So it's, you really can start writing to people's strengths and like, or be like, what would be really cool to do for this person? Or like, how right. can we make these two characters meet? Like, that would be a really cool dynamic. And so it's, yeah, it's really interesting and it's really challenging, but it, you know, six episodes is a nice amount of episodes as well. So you can mm-hmm. really find gorgeous little stories for everyone and like really sort of spread it out and, you know, and then... You know, people like Jason, like it's really cool. And it's like, what is the coolest thing that we can make this giant man do? You know,
right.
It's awesome.
It's so true what you say about, you know, once you have a cast, you know, if you're writing a show and you haven't started filming your show yet, or you haven't even really cast your characters, it's hard to know what these people can do once they're saying the lines. Mm-hmm. But once they've embodied these characters for a couple of seasons, you're now writing for them and you can, you know, like you said, write to their strengths, which just makes the project even better because now you're really messing with these people and making them do things. And it's got to be so much fun to see them, you know, saying your lines or doing the things that you guys have come up in the writer's room for them to do.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So, have you, are you writing any episodes on your own for this upcoming season?
No, I'm not. No, not yet.
So what is it that, it must be very interesting to be immersed in this world. You know, you guys are kind of in your own little bubble in St. John's. What's a typical day like? Has there been kind of a typical day on the set of Frontier or in the room at Frontier?
Yeah, like this season... Especially, it's a little more structured because they also are prepping Caught, the other series that's happening.
Yes. Okay.
So the building's quite full. So we go up to our writing room for around 10, mm-hmm. and usually get a Starbucks order in. So that goes out.
Sure.
And then we actually have been really good about just diving right into it. You know, usually there's like 5 or 10 minutes of just like, how was your night, chit chat, where'd you eat for supper last night? But then we're right into it. You know, we don't have a ton of time, so we're really using all of our moments. And then we just, right now we're sort of just doing individual episode breaks. So we do those for like kind of like a week, a week per episode. And then, yeah, we write till about 12:30 and then go down and take some of the Cots catered lunch and sneak back upstairs. Someone else does another Starbucks run. And we usually go between 4 and 6, depending, you know, because you can only go for so long and then everyone's brain is just sort of mush. And then it's just, I mean, you could keep going, but it's like, Well, why don't we go home, get some sleep, and then come back with new, fresh ideas?
Well, now, isn't that interesting? Because like Kevin White and Inns Choi did in the writer's room, you know, Kevin said that he likes to run a structured day so that people aren't burnt out. And it turns out that the Blackie brothers are doing the same thing on Frontier.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's pretty common. It's been pretty common in most of the rooms that I've been in. But with Kevin, with his style, is he has like really structured breaks and like an hour. I think he said he takes an hour and a half for lunch every day. Like we often, I haven't been in a room that was that structured. We'll often grab our lunch. But then, like, if we're all, like, sort of, like, on an idea or, like, on a train, we'll tend to just eat through lunch. Whereas it seems like Kevin is like, okay, so everyone just sort of splits for the hour. And I feel like both of them are great. Like, it's nice to have time that you could be like, ooh, I could, like, go, you know, sneak into the grocery store or, like, do that really quick doctor's appointment or whatever. But mostly I structure my life with making all those appointments on the weekends or in the evenings if I can, just because you never know. But that being said, all I found that, you know, all the rooms that I've also worked in have been flexible in terms of if you're like, I have this call at 3 o'clock and people are like, yeah, step out of the room, do your call, no problem. You know, like it's, you know, everyone is understanding that we're all humans doing a million things at once. And when we're in the room, we're in the room, but it's, you know, there's real life sometimes that you have to do and have to step out for a minute.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously you can't, I don't want you to get into any trouble by telling me anything that happens hugely in season two, but is there anything that you can tease? Or are we just, you know, more character development, more action, more Jason Momoa in season two?
Oh yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. It's going to be very full of action. Like it's emotional. I'm really proud of the season, and I've actually seen cuts for all 6 episodes, and it's so exciting, because you know you write stuff in the room and you break out all the episodes, and then the episodes get written and then they get changed and they go into production and they change even more and then you get to the cut. So it's really exciting to watch the cuts and be like, oh, like that's so different, or like, whoa, like that was exactly like I had always imagined it. And I think we've got really great arcs for our characters. And I think, you know, like I'm always all about the women's roles, and like I always want like beautiful, strong, you know, women making real life messy, gorgeous choices. And I think we did really well on that this year.
Well, and I do have to say that it was the same in season one. In my opinion, I thought that that the female characters were very well written and very strong. In the first season. So that's great to hear that that's happening in season two, and I'm assuming in season three as well.
Oh yeah.
It's not, you know, Jessica, her character, and I don't want to mispronounce it. It's Sokanen, right?
Sokanen.
See, I did it when I interviewed her too, about the character. She's just so impressive to me. I love that character and how just kick-assy she is. But also she's damaged as well. But, you know, it's just made her life experience has just made her stronger. And she was just a lot of fun to watch in season one.
Oh, she's amazing. She's so amazing. And she's a brilliant actor. She absolutely kills the role. It's like it's such a joy to come up with a story for her, and yeah, she is awesome.
So how many more weeks of writing do you guys have? And then when do they start into production?
I'm going to be here for 2 more weeks, but then there's probably, they're doing a little bit of breaking in Toronto. Like I said, it's a little bit all over.
Yeah.
For this season.
Are they shooting over the summer though?
No. We won't be shooting till probably, not till October. So it'll still be quite a while. So it's also interesting because, you know, we're like, oh, this could be cool. But then it's like, oh no, we're going to be filming that in probably December.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you're writing a little bit for the Newfoundland time of year, which is probably always snow except for July.
Yeah. Those furs aren't just for wardrobe. They're really to keep people alive.
I know they keep the furs in one of the rooms very close to where we write. And I'm always tempted to just like go in and wear them because they're just so beautiful. Like, would that be weird? Yeah, that'd probably be weird. Stay out of the wardrobe room, Lisa.
You're getting into character. That's what it is.
I know. When I worked as an assistant, I worked as Michelle Lovretta's assistant on season 2 of Killjoys.
Yeah.
And Trish Baker, who does the wardrobe for them, she's so amazing. And her and I became dear friends, and I was always in the wardrobe room bugging them, and I would often be like, you know, I would like spill something on myself, and I'd be like, oh guys, I guess I'm gonna have to wear like one of Dutch's jackets.
See, that's where the fun is, working on these genre pieces like Frontier or Killjoys, because not only do you have these great fun characters, you've got these sets that you can visit and these wardrobe rooms that you can wander around in. Forget about a medical drama.
Yeah. No, it's medical drama. It's cool to be like hanging out in like the morgue in the hospital, you know? But I once actually played a role in Haven, and my character was killed, and then I had to do one of those like hospital corpse morgue scenes. And
oh yeah.
It was so hard. It was crazy because like the scene was, I was like in the body bag, and they have a little chat over me, and then they unzip the bag and like look at my wound or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it's so challenging as an actor, because it's like, you're like, they're like, they were really great about how it was executed, and you know, they only zipped up the bag like right before the cameras rolled, but still you're like lying in a zipped up bag, and then someone unzips the bag, but you're supposed to not breathe, because your immediate reaction when the bag gets unzipped would be to take like this beautiful gulp of fresh air, but you're like, nope, still dead, and trying not to like make your chest move. Like, you're like, can I breathe through like my ankles somehow? Like, how do I make this so it doesn't look like I'm breathing? But yes, so
wow.
I love playing on sets, and I love wardrobe, which is probably part of the reason why I love acting so much as well, because it's more, you know, reasonable for an actor to be wearing wardrobe than, you know, one of the writers slinking around being like, oh, I like that. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. So before we wrap up with talking about some of the things that you've kind of got in development that you're allowed to talk about, let's take one last break with a question about growing up and the types of TV shows that you watched. And if you didn't watch TV, which I've had some people say that they didn't grow up watching any TV, that's okay too. But if you did grow up watching any kid shows, what were they?
Oh, kid shows. That's a great question. I definitely remember watching Sesame Street and loving that.
Yep.
And I also, have a younger sister, Jessie, and she's 3 years younger than me. So I got away a little bit with watching, you know, younger shows for longer periods of time, probably than most people did. I was like, yeah, I'm still watching Sesame Street. What? No, it's because of my sister. It's not because I don't absolutely love this show.
That's right.
And my dad's a huge Trekkie, so there was always Star Trek on in the house. So I, you know, come by my love of genre quite naturally. Mm-hmm. And I watched a lot of Bob Ross painting with my grandmother, with my nanny.
Cool.
Snow. Yeah. But I most, like, I definitely was more of a reader than a TV watcher, I think.
And, okay.
Yeah, and I watched a lot. I watched the Disney's Escape to Witch Mountain. That was like, yes. I watched that movie on repeat. Like, mom, if it was my turn to pick out the movie from the from the movie Rental Place. Remember those?
Yeah. Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah, there was this place called Jason's Video in my little town. And it was always like, I will come in and he would just like kind of like roll his eyes and like hand me that. And I'd be like, thank you very much. So, you know.
I can't believe that your parents just didn't buy a copy of it for you.
I know.
Christmas or birthday or something.
I know. That's really funny that they didn't. I'm going to have to be like, yo, I want that. I'll probably get that for Christmas this year. And I would actually still love it. I watched it not that long ago. And I'm like, do I still love this? And I'm like, yes.
So looking at your bio, you've got several things on the go, as anybody in Canadian television does. You know, you're working on your current project, but you've also got some stuff in development and things like that. Is there anything that you can say about 10 Days in the Valley at this point or Little Dog, or do you have to hold off on both of those?
Oh, well, they're both so different and so awesome. I like 10 Days, Tessie Cameron, she's so brilliant, and her and Sherry, they... I have been working on this. It's Tessie's idea. So 10 Days was really an interesting experience because even though it was created by Tess and the writing room was in Toronto, it's actually an American show, which was really kind of interesting and strange. And I actually went in March and I got to go to Paramount and to like visit the studio, and like it was so surreal, and it was like very fancy, and honestly, that show is going to be so awesome. Like when I read the first script, I wrote Tassie this email in the middle of the night, and I was just like, and I hadn't actually met her, I don't think, in person at this point, but I was just like, it was so gushy, and I sent it, and then I was like, oh, is that unprofessional? But I was like, I don't care, it's true. Like I was just so into the characters, and they were so real, and just. It's just so, so great. I'm so stoked for it. I can't wait for it to come out and for everyone to see it. And it's got some really great actors in it. And the whole team, both here and both in LA, have been working so hard. And they're just about done production. And then I think it's going to be headlining ABC's fall lineup, which is just so cool. Maybe, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. It could either be summer or, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably going to be fall.
Yeah, like I'm not sure. I don't think that they've announced when it comes out yet, and I'm just guessing that that's when it is. But I'm like, can it come out tomorrow? Like I'm just so excited to see it. I haven't seen any of the cuts or anything. And then Little Dog is a half hour comedy that's in development, and it's so funny, and it's that one has been a real treat to work on as well. And it's it's been my first comedy room, so it's been it's so cool. It's a real treat. I'm not really allowed to say much about anything about either of them, but I can tell you that I am very, very excited. Yeah.
who's the showrunner on Little Dog? Can you say that?
Yeah. Well, it's Joel Thomas Hines' show.
Okay.
And then I don't know, like, who the official showrunner is. I guess Sherry is running it, but she, like I said, she's in LA, and so Chris Roberts has also. I would say Chris Roberts is like running the room, and he's amazing. Okay. It's funny. I started working with Chris on Frontier, and then he was on 10 Days, and he's here. Mm. Like I think he's up one floor above me in the hotel working on Frontier as well. So like, and Little Dog. So basically everything I've done except for Killjoys has been with Chris. So that's kind of fun. He's so brilliant and just awesome in the room. So it's just been like, that's one of the best things, is just getting to meet all these other amazing writers and creators and just hearing and watching how they work has like just, I feel like has made me such a better writer. And like, you know, I'm still very much learning, and you know, they'll drop some like writery lingo and I'm like writing things down like, oh yeah, no, that's what you say. And like, that's how you do it. So just like, you know, it helps me seem more professional just because I'm just like basically emulating all these great other artists that I get to work with.
Thanks to Lisa Rose Snow for sitting down and having a long form conversation with Greg David. It's great that we get to give you these conversations every couple of weeks. We have the regular TVA podcast at tv-eh.com, where we talk about the news and views on Canadian television once every 2 weeks. And then every other week, we have a longer form conversation with people who are either in front of the cameras or behind the cameras, or busy scribbling out scripts or doing a whole bunch of tech stuff. Anyone who's involved in Canadian television, we will hopefully reach out to and have a conversation with at one point or another. You can reach Greg if you want to on Twitter at Greg_David. You can reach me if you want to at Anthony Marco. And you can fire off and reach the TVA website and Twitter account at TV_EH or TV-EH.com. And you can go ahead and leave a comment there. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, because this is maybe your favorite part of subscribing and listening in your earbuds, you can support us by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/TV_EH. And even if it's $1 a month or $1 an episode, whatever you feel is worth contributing to keep hearing the audio in your ears about Canadian television. Yes, we jump media. We're doing the transmedia kind of thing. We would certainly appreciate it. That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.